Thank you for joining us for episode 38 of Pepperdine People. I am Luisa Blanco, and I am joined today by Álvaro Vargas Llosa. Thank you so much for being here. There are so many pressing things related to U.S.-Latin American relations and economic development in Latin America, but I think I want to start with one which I think is the most controversial and the most pressing one today, which relates to immigration reform in the United States. So my question will be, what do you think needs to be done in relation to immigration in the United States, and what do you think is going to be done in the near future due to the political constraint? And here in the near future, I'm talking about 2-3 years from now?
Well, that's a great question. So thanks for having me. First of all, I'm very happy to be here. This is a really crucial question, I think. When you have a situation like you have in the United States today, in which there is a divorce, a big separation between the law and reality, you need to bring the two together. When you have a huge mass of people who are living outside of the law, so to speak, you have a disconnect between the law and reality. Reality has overtaken the law, and clearly that disconnect speaks to us of a dysfunctional system, a system that's not able to absorb all the immigrants that the economy and society at large clearly wants and needs. If it didn't want them and didn't need them, they wouldn't be here. So I think that it's really important that the decision makers in this country come to a decision as to how to incorporate into the system smoothly with the least amount of social conflict and certainly the least amount of political conflict, important number of people who are clearly needed by this economy.
Of course.
Who clearly have a role to play in this economy and this society, but who have not been absorbed by the law. Because the law, as I say, is at this point, I think, excessively restrictive.
And it's very obsolete, right?
Yes, very
when was
obsolete.
The last time we had that law?
Well, what tends to happen is this. I mean, if you look at immigration in the last century, even last two centuries, the law is usually designed starting from an analysis of how many immigrants the economy at the time at which the law is being written needs.
Oh, yeah.
But, of course, those things change. I mean, they evolve dramatically. In times of recession, the U.S. economy needs a much smaller number of workers from abroad, from overseas, than in times of bonanza. How can the law, if it's rigid, if it's not flexible, how can it anticipate how many workers the economy will need 10, 15, 20 years from now? So you need
that's
a system
true.
That's able to adapt, that's flexible. At the same time, you already have a problem because you already have 12, I mean, there are different figures, million people in the United States who are full members of the U.S. economy. They already take part in the U.S. economy who are living outside of the law. You need to find a path to legalization. I mean, the idea of, 12 million people, marching down the border on CNN is unthinkable. It's inconceivable. I mean, they're not going to deport 12 million people. It's just never going to happen. I mean, we all know that. So you need to find a way to legalize them. So that they come up from the sort of underground economy into the legal economy, and so that they can fully assimilate, because that's one of the ironies. They are sometimes by critics of immigration, they are accused of not wanting or not being able to fully assimilate into U.S. culture, and yet one of the obstacles that they're facing is precisely the fact that the law.
And do you think we will have that in the near future due to the political constraints? There are too many problems pressing the United States. Maybe immigration reform will just be sitting down there for now. What is your view?
You know what? It really will depend on the very important debate within the conservative family. I think that's going to be really crucial in the next few years. You have a fascinating dynamic going on within the conservative family, so to speak, at large in the country and within the Republican Party in particular. There are currents of opinion within the conservative and the Republican camp, so to speak, that are fully pro-immigration. And
then you have
others that are very critical of immigration.
Mm.
And that, I think that's going to be the crucial debate, because if conservatives and the Republicans come to a decision on this and embrace some form of path to legalization for those who are already here and a more flexible system for those who will want to come in the future, then I think reform will be possible. Especially since obviously they could control now the House of Representatives and they will be very important in the Senate. And I think that the trend in the country is going towards their way. I think they will be decisive on this. The problem is, of course, that there are currents of opinion within that group that are also very critical of immigration, that are...
So there is going to be a big debate.
I think it's going to be a big debate. And I think that, I mean... People think this is a debate between Republicans and Democrats or between conservatives and liberals. And I think the really important debate is taking place among conservatives themselves because they're really split on this issue. It's very interesting.
Very interesting. Thank you so much about your insights on immigration. I know you are currently working on that, so I really appreciate your insights. Well, I have another question related to Latin American region overall. And here my question is related to The Economist just had a report in September about how Latin American region is really rising. It's really becoming more important in the global economy. And my question is related to what do you think will be the role that the United States will play now that the U.S. is, that the Latin American region is rising? So will that change the way that the U.S. does foreign policy in the region? And then also the issue of China. China has increased its participation in the Latin American region significantly in the last couple of years. Would that also change, the rules of the game or the way in which foreign policy is directed in the United States towards the Latin American region? What do you think?
I think so. I think the answer to both questions is really yes. I mean, I think the U.S. foreign policy will eventually have to be sensitive to what is happening in Latin America, which is really what is happening is the emergence of Latin America as a big player. That is a recent development, but it's one that is unequivocal. I mean, whichever way you look at it, Latin America is becoming more and more significant. Of course, not every single country, but you've got players like Brazil, like Mexico and others that are really coming up fast. In the last few years, as we all know, the United States has been obviously preoccupied with other areas of the world. The issue of security, of course, has been paramount. But in terms of trade, other parts of the world have been more attractive to them. And so that has meant that foreign policy has not focused on Latin America all that much. But that's going to have to change, not only because Latin America is becoming a reality, and it's a next door neighbor reality, but also because, I mean, the United States will find out that other regional blocs are beginning to intensify their own links among member states. Most of China's trade, I mean, people from the perspective of the United States don't always see it that way, but most of the trade done by China takes place within Asia. Yes, and 75% of European trade takes place among European countries. So clearly that means that the United States needs to intensify its ties with Latin America, commercial and otherwise, in a way that I think is much, much more clear, much more intense than hitherto. In terms of China, I think that's another very interesting development, and that might trigger a greater interest by the United States in Latin America, simply because of obviously the United States considers Latin America an area of special influence for the United States, and the thought that China will play a bigger role in the future, I think, will in many ways spur much greater interest in the United States. And yes, China is playing a bigger role. I mean, the expansion of trade is dramatic. I was looking at some figures recently, and since 1990, in the last two decades, trade has increased 40 times, by a factor of 40. Trade between China and Latin America.
Yeah,
there's not so much investment yet, but it'll come, right? It's beginning to happen,
especially in the natural resource sector, right?
Yes. So oil and others. Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
So,
So the United States will not just sit by and watch this happen. I am sure this will create a greater interest.
Oh, very interesting. So you will think that we might move towards a more economic integration, towards a more significant, I guess, trading bloc in the region. That might be the future we should expect to see.
Well, I think that will eventually happen. I mean, as you know, there was a chance that was missed a few years ago. President Bush tried to promote a free trade area of the Americas. Most Latin American countries were in favor. I mean, the irony is that this failed only because four or five countries opposed it, and yet more than 25 countries were in favor. I think they missed a big opportunity there. I mean, if they had created a real free trade area of the Americas, and I mean a real one, I mean, where barriers were really removed completely, I think we would have made a big leap forward in terms of integration and the intensification of relations. And that might have, in turn, helped the immigration debate. The more ties you have, eventually the greater the pressure for a liberalization of the movement or circulation of people there is. Because if you have an environment in which there is a free circulation of goods and services and ideas, but not of people, eventually, the European Union is a good example of that, eventually you're going to liberalize the flow of people as well. So that would have helped. But, I mean, the fact that it failed doesn't mean it won't be taken up again. Eventually, I think the way the world is moving, I think it'll create almost an unbearable pressure in favor of some kind of integration. And I think that'll be a good thing.
There is higher probability that we'll move into that direction because of the developments in Latin America and then also the pressure of China.
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Well, we don't have much time, but I really want to ask you this question because it relates to my own research. We have observed that since the 1990s, there has been an increase on leftist presidents in Latin America, right? We have seen this significant move towards leftist politics, and I want to see what is your point of view for the next presidential elections that are going to be taking place in Latin America. We're going to see a lot of shift in power. We have elections coming up in 2011. In Peru and Argentina, correct? And then I think in 2012 we have Mexico and Venezuela. Should we expect to see a further move towards the left, a continuation in that pattern, or should we start moving back to a more centrist approach? Well, for my research, right, I just finish this empirical paper where I'm able to find how actually natural resources matter a lot, and natural resources tend to be affiliated with natural resource abundance tends to be affiliated with more leftist presidents, right? And I guess here I will want to get your insights on what do you think we should expect to see in the couple of next political elections, like what will be the movement of Latin America? Should it still be there, or should more towards the leftist side, or should we move more towards the centrist, rightist approach?
That's also a very important point, because one of the things that happened in the last, I would say, decade and a half in Latin America has been the split of the left in two camps.
Yes.
One part of the left has become much more modern, much more outward-looking, much more globalized in its focus, if you want, in its vision. A little bit like the left, or the sort of democratic left in Europe, where it left Marxism and it adopted the market economy and so forth. So you've had part of that in Latin America. I mean, if you look at Chile, of course, not in this government, which is a center right government, but before this government, even Peru, the current president of Peru, who was a hard left man in the 80s. If you look at Uruguay, if you look at Brazil, all these countries are governed by the center-left, and yet these are center-left leaders and movements that are not all that different from center-right kind of government in Latin America. And then the others are
radical left,
and they are mostly, as your research points out, they're mostly based in countries where natural resources are abundant and also a big part of the political debate, and obviously Venezuela, Bolivia, Ecuador, etc. So in the next few years, I think you will continue to see that dynamic. I mean, I don't foresee a change of government in some of these countries with big natural resources, partly because not only because they have a popular base, but more importantly, perhaps, because they have established – a semi-authoritarian type of system that makes it very difficult to remove them from power. They have sort of began to, they've begun to dismantle some of the democratic institutions that allow them to get into power in the first place. As you know, they've changed the constitution.
Yes.
They've called for referendums on re-election. I mean, there's a number of steps that they've taken.
And it's very unfortunate, right? Yeah. Because all the democratization process
exactly.
is being thrown
away.
It took a long time,
a lot of violence, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of blood. And yes, it's an unfortunate development. Whereas in the other countries that are governed by the center-left, I think you will see an alternation of power. You will see like what happened in Chile, where the center-left lost the elections, the center-right came into power. I think in Peru, you're going to see something similar in the next election. I mean, there will be a center-right government. There are two or three different options that are vying for power, but you will see that development. I wouldn't be surprised if Argentina goes the same way. As you know, the current government is increasingly unpopular. It's a populist sort of center-left government. It's sort of halfway between the hard left and the center-left. It's always difficult to define what Argentina
is. It's in the middle.
But clearly, it's a populist government. There's been a lot of nationalizations, very high taxation, over-regulation, sort of anti-imperialist stance in terms of foreign policy. I think you might see a reversal there because the opposition, mostly the center-right opposition, has grown enormously. They're disunited and they're not always able to operate in an effective way. But if they get their act together, I mean, it looks like Argentina could go that way.
Well, I mean, especially with the death of Néstor Kirchner, right?
Yes.
That might change the the political environment since he was expected to be the next presidential candidate and likely to be elected, maybe.
Yeah.
So.
And he also played a very important role sort of behind the scenes in terms of keeping the coalition that supported President Cristina Kirchner in place. And now that he's not there, it's not clear who's going to play that role. And if they can't do that, then I think she'll be considerably weakened in terms of her ability to maintain the coalition that has kept her in power.
Thank you. Thank you. This is very interesting. As I say, it relates to my research, so I'm very excited. We had time to talk about it. But thank you so much for being
thank
with
you.
Us today. And thank you. Hopefully, we'll have you again.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for having me.